And we are live just a couple minutes later than planned, and that is because the redundancy recording device was giving me headaches. So whenever I am alone anyway, and I don't have a guest to worry about a second side audio, I always actually record to two different machines. Because why? You're preppers, you know the answer. Two is one, and one is none. So I always try to keep a backup recording going, and it was giving me a little bit of grief, so I had to fight it. I fought it, but I won. What are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about emancipation, not the Emancipation Proclamation that happened in the middle of the Civil War, the Emancipation Proclamation that you need to make for yourself. I don't like putting things this way, but you're a slave. Every single person in the modern world living in the United States today on one level or another is some fraction of a slave. And that's because somebody else holds a percentage of your income hostage. Your life force, your work, everything that you do is taxed. And it's one thing to tax your spending. I don't like it, but it's one thing to tax a person's spending. And in the end, all the money comes out of the same hole, so it's still a form of slavery. But it just seems to me to be so obviously vindictively theft-oriented, so direct in violation of the basic principles that we have of, you know, don't hurt people and don't take their stuff, to tax someone's productivity. To tax somebody's productivity and or property, but especially the productivity. When you go work and you do labor for another party, it is understood that you have every right to expect compensation for your labor, and that once that labor is extended, that compensation is supposed to be tendered, and it's tendered based on agreement. I agree to do this work. You agree to compensate me accordingly. I did the work. Where's my money? In fact, the very state that steals from you with taxes will enforce that on your behalf, most of the time anyway, to make sure that you're made whole. So what does it mean when somebody has a claim on 10 or 15 or 20 or 25% of your labor? You know, I wear a lot of shirts that come from John Willis over at SOE Tactical Gear, where one of his today, I really like the way that it looks and the way that it wears and all. But he sent me one recently I probably won't ever wear. And that's not because I disagree with it. It's because I'm not proud of it. It literally says on it, tax slave. Now, I'm not willing to brand myself that way, but I'm willing to admit it. And I'm going to tell you that we are in this position right now because we've lived this way for so long. And what I mean by that is, well, we'll get into it here in just a second, but I'm going to give you kind of a primer before we dig on into emancipating yourself today. One of the biggest deceptions that's been made to people in modern times is the belief that the average person wishes to be free. That free is a universally human desire, and we all want to be free. I think that there's a piece of us that that's true about. The more you're close to your natural state, the more that's true. But your fellow human beings around you, most of them don't want freedom. They don't want freedom. And I'll explain it using a chicken, a domesticated chicken, as an example. We have some chicken breeds that are notorious for going broody. They'll sit on eggs and make baby chickens. There's only a few, though, that are really, really reliable to do that. The majority of chickens don't make baby chickens, right? They just lay their egg and they couldn't care less about it. They just go off and do chicken things. But is it a innate native thing for a chicken, for a bird, to reproduce itself? And the answer is absolutely. But over time, since what we wanted was eggs, not baby chickens from these particular breeds, what did we do? We selectively bred out the broodiness. And we used conditioning like, hey, here's free food. Hey, this is where you go outside. This is when you come inside. Right? We did these things somewhat intentionally, somewhat unintentionally to the chicken over time, to where most chickens don't really care about sitting on eggs for 21 days, being dedicated to that point, hatching a baby and then taking those babies and raising them for 3, 6, 10 weeks sometimes until those babies are able to fend for themselves. So is the chicken really innately a mother or not? And the answer is yes, the chicken is innately a mother bird, and it has a biological drive to reproduce. But we can breed that out. And I think that's what's happened to humans when it comes to freedom. Freedom is like an echo in our minds, a concept that we know we should want. But if you look at how most people behave, it is not something that you would believe if you came here from another place. If you came here from another planet, if you were, what's his name, the puppet, Alf from Melnack, I think was his planet, right? And you're trying to eat cats at all, and you looked around at these humans, you would not think these humans value freedom at all. Especially if your race or your species knew what freedom really was. Anyway, with that in mind, we'll come back and talk about how we break those chains and how we adapt to the next couple decades. They're going to be brutal, honestly, in just a second. Before we do that, let's hear from our sponsors of the day. It might seem kind of depressing, some of the stuff I'm going to say today, but you know what? I've never been depressed. I've never been depressed when I had a piece of biltong in my hand or in my mouth or both, because that meant I got another bite coming. And so, you know, about a year ago, I heard from Anton at Anton's Land of Biltong. We've even had him on the show as a guest since then. He's been a supporter of the MSB for quite a while. Well, just last week, we finally got to where we could make room and space and accommodation to bring him on as a show sponsor, and I'm stoked. I now, again, have a sponsor that is meat-based who pays me with product. Now, we actually have a hybrid split deal. Details don't matter, but I get biltong and Duars in my mailbox every 2 weeks from Anton, and you can too, or as often as you want or infrequently as you want, but trust me, this stuff is addictive. And so Anton's Land of Biltong is now a sponsor. They are also an MSB discount vendor, so you can save when you're ordering biltong. But may I make a suggestion for you to try, especially even if you've had biltong already? By all means, get some biltong. Get some of the Wagyu, get some of the Angus, whatever. Get it spicy, get it mild, get it however you like it. But try the Druars, right? That basically translates to dry sausage. And it's these guys, if you're watching the video right here, these things are like crack cocaine to me. I just actually ordered a pound of those and a pound of the Kenabassi sausages as well, even though I get a shipment to me every 2 weeks as part of our sponsorship agreement. That's how much I like this stuff. As I know I'm getting into the week that my shipment's coming, I start having my mouth salivate and like I start paying attention. When's the UPS guy going to get here? I know that my stuff always shows up on a Wednesday, so Wendy, I'm looking out the window. Give it a shot, and you will too. Next up today is Start 9. Instead of me talking about them, I'm just going to play their quick little video for you to explain why you might want to add a Start 9 embassy server to your life and take back your digital sovereignty.
We all save our data, but where is it saved? In the cloud, which is actually this building in one of these computers with millions of others. This is called a honeypot, a single place full of data worth a hacker's time to steal. But instead, if you saved your data on your own computer at home, you wouldn't be worth the attack. Saving your own data is easy. Simply plug in a Start9 device and start saving all your own data today. So, will you stay in the honeypot, or will you take control of your data? Start now. Start9.
And the one thing I want to say about Start9, because I think a lot of people at times may feel like, oh, that's great. I know tech nerd heads like Jack can do this or whatever. And I'm really not as technical as people think. I'm just good at talking about stuff once I understand it. I struggle as much to learn a new technology or something like that as anybody in this audience, I promise you. And there's plenty of you that are well ahead of me on that. If you can use a smartphone, if you can follow basic instructions, if you can install and use apps on a smartphone, you can run a Start9 server. And because they are such strong supporters of the show, they're not just sponsors, they do discounts for MSB members. You can get 9% off any of the servers available from Start9 and take back your digital sovereignty. And it fits well with today's show because we're talking about sovereignty today. We're talking about the sovereignty that is the most important sovereignty and the least discussed sovereignty in society today. It's impossible to have a sovereign society without having the type of sovereignty we're talking about. And yet they claim we do and we don't. And of course, I'm talking about individual sovereignty. Of all people, I'm going to talk about you know, when it comes to this subject. I'm going to talk about somebody that is the antithesis to sovereignty and individual freedom and freedom in general, one of the most mass murderous pieces of crap from human history, Joseph Stalin. But correct is correct, even if it is in opposition to what I stand for. So one thing Stalin once wrote was that if we look at communism and anarchism side by side, they might seem similar. I don't necessarily agree with that. But what his point was is that communism seeks to emancipate the collective, to free all the people simultaneously, whereas anarchism seeks the sovereignty and emancipation of the individual. And of course, he then went on to explain how the anarchists were wrong, etc. Well, sorry, you dead old piece of crap. No, it is impossible to have collective freedom without individual freedom. There's no such thing as collective freedom, because freedom to you and freedom to me are not the same thing. We might define the parameters of freedom, but real freedom is what I do with those parameters. So we might be able to, especially in this audience, you know, really come to a very swift agreement that a general concept of freedom is the ability to do anything you want as long as you don't hurt other people or take their stuff. Right? That's pretty easy. And most people would say that's a pretty reasonable position to have, including people that stand defiantly in opposition to it, because they'll just hear it and it'll resonate. Again, you have this echo of what individual sovereignty really is all about in you, in your heart, in your soul as a human. But for many of us, it's been deeply bred out. So when they hear that, they'll say, oh, that's completely reasonable. Oh, you should totally be able to do anything what you want as long as you don't hurt anybody or take stuff from them. Well, except do drugs. But I'm not hurting anybody or taking their stuff. Yeah, but my pastor says drugs are bad, or my teacher said drugs are bad, or my dad said drugs are bad. No one said they were good. So you don't have a right to tell anybody else what to do. So they'll start fumbling over it right away. But when you really point out to them what that means, like, well, if that's the case, then you can't have an income tax. You have to have voluntary services that people just choose to pay for. Then they start to lose their mind, right? They start losing their mind. And they do that because they have been bred into a society, programmed and conditioned into a society to think things cannot work unless the government does what it does. It's the price we pay for a civilized society. It's complete nonsense. It's total nonsense. And it's to the point, and I've seen people make jokes about this, but it's not really a joke. I think it's true that if the government had set up a plan that said when your child is 6 months, that's when preschool starts, and it's the job of preschool to teach your child, like, to not kill themselves with an electrical outlet and how to walk, right? Like how to get up off the ground and walk. First to crawl, then to pull themselves up, then to walk, because most kids are not crawling very well anyway by 6 months. How long do you think that program would have to run before, like, the current adult generation with children would tell you that without government, children wouldn't be able to learn how to walk? And I would say it's about three cycles. It would be the point at which nobody that's in the current, like, you could have old people are like, it's not that way. We used to, and they just sound like crazy old grandpa, right? When I was a kid, we used to open a can of beans with a knife and cook it in the fire and eat it and nothing bad happened. Okay, you crazy old coot, right? It'd be the same thing. The old people that are straight, we used to teach our kids to walk all the, yeah, they didn't walk, yeah, they didn't walk equally with other kids. It'd be some stupid shit like that, wouldn't it? How long do you really think it would take before we would attribute the ability of humans to walk to the state? And again, I think it'd be about three cycles until the first cycle was old. The last people that ever saw it happen were in the old folks' home. They'd just be ignored. And this is what's happened to our individual freedom. And this has happened, and I'm going to use a word that triggers some people again in this audience. This has happened to every empire that has ever existed. There has never been an empire that didn't eventually collapse and it didn't look a lot like it does today. And I'm talking about all of it. Spending money that they do not have and going into a fiat monetary system, that's been beat to death, but it's true. It's always happened. Annual agriculture run to the extent that it is capable of mining the soil before crop yields begin to collapse. Every empire ever under the sun. But also like the sexual depravity and everything. This was true in Mesoamerica before a single person from the European settlement ever got here, and entire civilizations collapsed. And whether it was directly why or not, there was sexual depravity going on in these settlements, in these giant cities that used to live, you know, exist here in North America. Many of them were gone and completely overgrown before any of the Western settlement ever even started. Read Charles Mann's book, 1491, to learn more about that if you want to. Right? So we have always had this at the Roman Empire, the Grecian Empire, some of the Chinese dynasties. All this shit has always been part of the decline of an empire and the eventual collapse. And every time you look, so we have this condensed version of history in our mind. Like, I think I was probably in my 20s before it really sunk into me. So the American Revolution lasted 8 years. Because when you learned about it in school, it was kind of like there was a couple of skirmishes and fights, and then they did the letter to the King of England, and then they ran around in the South for a little bit. Next thing you know, the British surrendered, and yay, we're free. Like, it gets condensed. 8 years. Think about what 8 years is. 8 years ago, it was 4 years before anybody heard of what friggin' COVID became. How different was your life 8 years ago to today? And so all of history gets condensed like this. So an 8-year war gets condensed into something that in the mind of the average person is like a year, maybe a year and a half. Even if you never actually thought that, it's the way that you think about it that matters. That's what's important to your conditioning and control. So this, again, this has happened in every single empire. And when we read about something like the Roman Empire collapse, we fail to realize like the entire collapse was like 300 years, three centuries, longer than the United States has been an independent sovereign country. It took for the Roman Empire to fully collapse into nothingness. First it split in two, and then one side declined and the other side kind of did better. Like, we don't think about it that way anymore. And so when we read these stories, then we are looking for an analog to today and saying, well, when's the collapse going to happen? Ladies and gentlemen, you are looking at it. You are in the event horizon of a black hole. You are being stretched out into a thin, narrow piece of wire, but you can't see it yet because you're waiting for this obvious point where it was here and now it's gone. Societies do not collapse overnight unless there is some sort of like massive catastrophic physical event. Like if you had a society that was like a city state in the past, and like the Tunguska meteor had hit that, okay, that will do it overnight. The nation state concept and networks of nation states are incredibly resilient no matter how flawed they are. And they are like dying beasts. They become more dangerous as they collapse. This has also always happened. And societies don't actually collapse. They go through cycles of collapse and rebuild because is there a Roman Empire today? No. Is there an Italian Empire today? No. Could you even say there's a European Empire today? With the U.S. acting as a surrogate on its behalf, sort of, kind of, maybe, but no. Right? But are there Romans? You know, they might not be hanging out and growing cabbages in the north of France, but there's Rome. Like, the place didn't go away, and people lived there. Right? The Grecian Empire, right? The Spartan Empire, these things are gone, but people still live there. So that's the other thing, is we have this idea that collapse means obliteration and gone and no more. It is a transformative process that humans have constantly done to themselves, and it always looks the same right before it really begins in earnest. A society of people that have become dependent upon a government that can no longer provide all the promises to the people that they use the promises to get the people to submit to slavery for. And now you have a bunch of slaves running around with no food and no housing being provided by the master anymore, but the master still wants the slave to obey and not leave. That's exactly where we are. And you might say, Jack, there's plenty of food. I just checked. You know, look at the price of it. Look at the price of it. And if you're a person that does well for yourself, imagine your income was half what it is, and now look at the price of it. If you live in a house that you bought in 2013, go price your house and its corresponding payment in 2024's money. If you bought that house today, go back and think to yourself, if I was in the exact same place financially in life that I was in 2013 today, I had the same job, the same credit, the same amount of money for a down payment, whatever, could I buy the house that I live in 11 years later? Most of you would say no. And so what happens is a lot of us that have been in this system for a little bit longer, and maybe some of these fiat-based, you know, debt-backed schemes like real estate, which is a appreciating asset with a declining value of the mortgage payment, we feel pretty good. We've done the big things in our life. We got past those. You have to think, whether you think they're lazy or stupid or whatever, we made them. We created them. You have to think about the kids that are not quite entering the workplace yet, the high schoolers, junior high schoolers, up to about the early 30-something, that demographic right now is getting waxed in the ass by society. And how long do you think that can go on? How long do you think that can go on before we really start dealing with it? And so when you have these conversations with people, they always try to wiggle around it, right? What's his name? James Howard Kunstler has a book called Too Much Magic. And while I don't agree with everything the guy says, I do respect his work. And the concept of too much magic is that we just believe someone will fix it sooner or later, that there has to be a way out of this. It's the person that gets told you have a cancer diagnosis and there is no hope and we should just go to palliative care. Like your oncologist is honest with you and they're just like, don't do anything because you're going to ruin the little bit of time you have left. And next thing you know, they're on a plane going to Mexico and they're going to get shark piss squirted up their nose or something. Because what we're dealing with when we get into this discussion, always with the average person, is the five stages of grief. It's the five stages of grief. And that the first one is denial. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. You're an ultra mega Trump, you know, supporter. Or whatever. If I was an ultra mega Trump supporter, I'd be telling you Donald Trump's going to fix it all. Right? I mean, I would be sitting here going, oh, we're screwed. We need to figure out how to do this for ourselves because the whole thing's falling apart. I'd be like, all we do is get the orange man to rise again like a great pumpkin. Everything will be great. Well, I don't believe that. I'm past denial long ago. But the average person, just like when they hear they're going to die or a loved one's going to die or something horrible is about to happen, first is always an initial reaction of denial. But if it's a strong enough case and they look at it enough, the denial begins to fade really quick. When your doctor puts that scan up and there's a giant tumor in your chest, it's hard to stay in denial for very long. So then when we accept, and I don't mean accept the totality of the thing, which is our last step in these five stages of grief, the first thing we do is accept that it's real. And when we accept that it's real, the response is generally anger. Why did this happen to me? And so if it's just you and you're sick, or it's just you and your spouse or your kid or your mom or your dad is sick, then it's generally confined to that. Why did this happen to me? You're angry at God. You're angry at the universe. You're angry at mathematical chance, whatever it is. You don't really tend to be angry at a group of people, right? Some people will find a way to leave. It's this group's fault that my loved one has cancer. And you might be right, but it doesn't do you any good. But it's usually confined there. But when it's something like we're talking about today, when it's societal collapse, when it's the end of an empire, and you look around you and you see, look at these people that are telling parents that their children can change their sex when they're 8 years old. It's their fault. It's tax and spend Democrats. It's heartless Republicans. But what we don't realize is all of the things that you're looking at are symptoms that allow you to diagnose the disease. They're not the root cause. The root cause of illness in a human being is always on some level biochemically structural. There's something not right in the core, or you would not get sick. Or if you did get sick, your body would just like, I got this, just take it out really quick. Number one way you cure cancer is by turning on the human immune system to attack the cancer. It's an immune deficiency disease. is what it really is. No one talks about it, but it is. The mRNA vaccines that were never supposed to be used for broad mass-produced vaccines, their root, their genesis, was that we would take, you know, Bill has cancer, and we literally extract the specific genomic cancer cell from Bill's cancer, not just, you know, testicular cancer or lymphoma or bone cancer or whatever, that we would get a little piece of it out and we would cultivate antibodies using Bill's own immune system with it and tailor make a vaccine and give it back to Bill to attack the cancer. So the immune system even can help us with cancer. But if we have a bigger, like I said, a societal structural problem, well, then we want to figure out who's responsible. And God, there's so many stupid people out there that are in charge of things that bear no consequences for being wrong. We want to make it all their fault. We have an open border like a sieve by a president that says it's the former president's fault. But the first thing the current president did was undo all the things that actually sort of kind of had the border secure. That's not pro-Trump or anti-Biden. That's just a statement of fact. And when you jump on any piece of that, like, hell yeah, or, well, you're just stupid, it doesn't matter. You're still in the denial phase, right? Or more accurately, you might have already moved past and you're carrying the anger stage two into stage three, which is what? Bargaining. You got the terrible diagnosis. You have 6 months to live at best. Dear God, if you take this from me, I'll be a better person. That's bargaining. Generally doesn't work. But if we just get the right people in charge, we can fix this. Okay, so who are you going to get in charge that's going to fix the fact that the United States currently has $34 trillion in debt and now has interest payments on the debt that are as big as all but the two other largest expenses in our government? Who's going to fix that? Well, you're not. Who's going to fix that our farms should have a minimum of 2% organic matter in their soil, and they have a 0.5% at best in most conventional farms and even many organic farms? Who's going to fix that? Who's going to fix the fact that our agricultural fields literally export in tonnage more topsoil than anything else we export from this country every year? We get nothing for it. It goes in the ocean. Who's going to fix that? All the ag stuff I just gave you is actually very fixable, but who's going to do it? The entire system is designed to prevent that from happening. And then just keep, you know, who's going to fix the fact that our money has been completely debased since 1971? Who's going to fix the fact that we have built entire industries based on administrators that are unnecessary? But if we get rid of all the administrators now, then we have unemployment of, like, you know, 40%. How's that going to work? Who's going to fix this? Who's going to fix the fact that we have pissed off almost every single government on the planet in some way, loves us and hates us? They love us for our money while our machine is printing, but they have some reason to hate us. Our staunchest allies, go out in the streets and ask their general population what they really think of America. We're not exactly popular. Who's going to fix that? Europe can't feed itself. Who's going to fix that? We're kind of wrapped in with that. Who's going to fix any of this stuff? No one. But you want to bargain. And that's the next stage, bargain. But if we only, I could do this. No. You have to let go. But what happens is bargaining and the fourth stage, depression, they basically go into a cycle. People become really, really depressed. I guess I am going to die. I guess the way of life that I grew up with in this country, my grandchildren won't really know it. My great-grandchildren that I may never know certainly won't. They're going to take away every last shred of freedom. There's nothing I can do. See, and right there, you're so close to getting to the point where you can actually do something about it. But what ends up happening? What ends up happening? There's nothing I can do. That is moving to the fifth stage, acceptance. Because as soon as I accept there's nothing I can do in this context, then I can ask the actual question that's important. In this context, what can I do? Which is what we're going to go do next. But I need to really get into you this depression, bargaining. I want to call it a cycle, but it's more like a trap. It's more like a fallback loop that fails. Like it needs an exit function, like in a diagram where you're like, if this, then that, if this, then that, and you end up in this loop and you can't get out. You need like a certain amount of times you go around that loop before you give up, and there's an exit function. And that exit function is to, I accept that this is the way things are. I've looked at enough history to know what I'm seeing in front of me right now, and I know what comes next. It'll be the same but different, man. Of course it'll be different. There's more people in the world. There's different technology in the world. But in the end, humans are wired the same. It will be the same. They're all going to be mad and in denial and angry when we're already at acceptance. And they're going to be dangerous. So we need to stay the hell away from them, because that's the truth. What do you think happens when collectively, the majority of people move from denial to anger? It will be in a kind of, it'll be gradually, then suddenly, right? It'll be almost overnight. Those of us who have been screaming this for decades will be like, we told you. But when you say we told you, do it on a camera 1,000 miles away from the people you're talking to. Don't do it in the street, because they'll kill you. They will drag you through the street, throw you through a window, and set the building on fire. I'm not even kidding. I'm not saying in every instance. I'm saying, but shit like that will happen. Because it always has. The last thing people in this state want to hear is the truth. They don't want to hear the truth now. See, when you're in the anger stage, you still have the ability to go back to bargaining and up. I'm sorry, back to denial and up to bargaining. And they'll vacillate in there for a long time. And this is when dictators rise. You're right. It's all of these people over here. Just let me kill them for you and everything will be okay. Or some version thereof. This is where we are. So what do we do? First of all, we need individual secession. I am a firm supporter of the idea of Texas nationalism. In other words, the state of Texas saying, you know what? It's been a good run. We appreciate everything that we did together. This just isn't working for us anymore. We'll be cool. We'll sell you our oil. We'll refine your oil for you. We'll do all these other, we grow a lot of beef. We'll have happy to sell you beef. Your people can visit here with a passport anytime they want, but this is now a republic. Go get fucked. I am totally for that idea. I love that idea. I think the odds of it happening are about 1,000,000 to 1. Like, and that is the best case scenario. That is the state with the most capability to actually do it in the whole country. You know, I don't think it's going to happen. So this whole idea that we'll break up into the end, we may eventually do it, but it won't be in the proactive way that I'm talking about. It'll be the consequence. It'll be more like USSR falling apart. Like, this is now the consequence of a failed state. It wasn't really anybody's choice. And trust me, there were plenty of people on the breakaway side that weren't for that either, because they had benefited by being – there are people that benefit by being part of the elite class in every government. You know what they try to tell you is like, well, in America, we have an elite class. Yeah, and they're scumbags, but there's a lot of them. And maybe one day you could be one of them. But in a communist government, there's only a very few. And you can never get in there. That's bullshit. There are plenty of wealthy-ass oligarchs in the Soviet Union. Plenty of them. And plenty of poor people. And plenty of people in the middle. Now, upward mobility in a communist society is more difficult than upward mobility in a fascist society, but they both end up as failed states in the end, especially when they do all the other things that we're talking about. So we need individual secession because, and this is where I started out, most people don't want freedom. It is very hard for you to get to acceptance in the 5 stages of grief until you accept that when you walk down the street, the majority of people around you want nothing to do with freedom. They don't want anything to do with freedom. It's scary as shit when you've lived in a cage your whole life. You want me to prove they don't want freedom? How long do you think it would take for you to ask them a victimless crime that they think should be decriminalized and that they would find one that they would say, no, not that, right? You ask a person, do you think that it should be illegal to have prostitution? And they'll probably say no. Now, some people would say, I don't care. 2 adults, one wants to charge money for sex with the other. I don't care. But a lot of people would say no. But if you turn around and say, well, So then what, should we outlaw porn? They go, well, not really. So wait a minute. What you're saying, think about how confused this person is, right? What you're saying is if I have a camera and I pay 2 people to have sex on the camera, that's okay. But if the two people that are on the camera don't have a camera, one pays the other, that's not okay. Right? Now, I'm not advocating for people to go out and be prostitutes. I'm just saying if you believe in freedom, then if somebody wants to do that, like if it's totally acceptable for one individual to go in the bar, meet another individual, and go home together, but then you're going to say if one gives the other one money, it's not. I'm sorry, that's not freedom. And then if you're like, I don't give a shit about any of this, keep going. Drugs. Like should cannabis not be regulated and licensed? Just be, it's a plant, so decriminalize it. You will probably have to go through five issues where the average person will pick two or three that they just do not believe can be decriminalized, even though they can't tell you who the victim is. So they don't want freedom. If you told them, let's get rid of welfare. Yes, most people actually would say, yeah, until you start listing welfare programs that they don't think of as welfare programs. They don't want freedom. Freedom means it's all you, baby. It's all you and people who will voluntarily help you, and that's it. That's scary as shit to people. People do not want to be free. Because to truly be free, you have to reach a state of acceptance where you're okay with another person also being free. What most people mean when they say they want freedom is they want the rules that they find to be reasonable based on their mindset, their way. This weekend, we had a discussion on X about a law that was just passed. I think it's Louisiana. If it's not Louisiana, it's one of the southern states. Someone around me. It's either like Louisiana or Oklahoma or Arkansas. I think it's Louisiana. And this new law says if a state wants, if a school district wants funding from the state versus just their district, right, in their county, they want the state funds, they are required to display the Ten Commandments in every classroom. And I could not believe how many people that talk about themselves as Liberty community members that were okay with it. But it's God's word. What if it was somebody else's God's word? What if they wanted to put they say, and not just, can you do it, right? They've said, in order to receive state funding, you have to put the Egyptian spell of the dead on the wall of your school. Nobody was for that. And then when you pointed out to them that, you know, the majority of the Ten Commandments come straight out of the Egyptian spell of the dead, except for like the Sabbath day thing and what have you, then they just kind of pushed it off and said that doesn't matter. But what about the what if it was a sacred scroll of the Buddhists? What if it was something from the Quran? Would you be okay with it? And of course, no, because that's not our version. Well, that's why we had this idea that the state and religion should not copulate and make satanic babies. Because when you take religion and you put it with the state, they do copulate and they do make Satan babies. One way or another, it always goes bad. It always goes bad. Religion is fine. It's fine onto itself. When you give it the authority, clout, and force of the state, it's always going to roll over people. So the people around you do not wish to be free. Hence, you cannot fight for collective sovereignty because they don't want it. And I got something else for you. You're not going to like this one. That is their freedom. If you want to bind yourself to others, you have every right to. If you want to submit yourself to another, you have every right to. So we can no more claim to be advocates of liberty if we try to drag people out of slavery that don't want to come than they can when they try to drag us into their version that they think of as benign and wonderful. We have to be okay with their freedom, even though we think their freedom is stupid. Because I think a lot of things that people do that I advocate against, laws against it, are stupid. They're very stupid behaviors. It doesn't mean that I want a law to prevent you from doing it. I believe that life is a teacher. Some people are slow learners and take longer to learn. As long as you're not hurting anybody else, you have a right to do anything you want to yourself as an adult. Anything. That's freedom. If you don't agree with that, you're just proving my point. Some piece of you has been domesticated sufficiently that you don't really want freedom. Now, I don't want people to do the stupid things. I think we should endeavor to teach people how not to do stupid things, to explain why they're stupid things to do. But in the end, we can't use force to prevent it unless it's going to harm another person. Very simple, but most people don't want that. And so because most people don't want freedom, no one can free you. It's all up to you. You have to do it because you don't have another option. And it's the only thing you actually control. I love my wife. She loves me. I would lay down and die for that woman. If I got into a situation where, like, it's me or her, take me. We are as close as any two humans can be. We've raised a son together. We take care of grandchildren together. We have our ups and downs. We're a wonderful couple. I don't control my wife, and she doesn't control me. I probably have more influence on my wife than any other human does. And my wife definitely has more influence on me than any other human does. You can tell me something, I'll be like, that's stupid, go away, don't bother me. If my wife tells me, and I'm going to consider it and think, well, if she says it, and she knows me as well as she does, then I should at least think about this. Still doesn't control me. If you don't control your wife, and they'll be like, I control my kids. No, you don't. No, you don't. You have a huge amount of control on your child when they're very young, and as they age, that control cedes to them whether you accept it or not. And the parents that don't accept that, you're the person that when your kid leaves home, they go batshit crazy nuts. Like, I saw this happen with a girlfriend of my nephew. Like, she was 1 year ahead of him. She went to college a year before he did. I'm like, that relationship has got 2 weeks once she leaves. Because her parents were like the kind of people that had like apps on her phone and monitored where she went and shit. They didn't want her to come to his birthday party at our house because there would be boys there. Like, that kind of shit. Yeah, it always blows up. That always blows up because there is that innate spark of freedom in people. But you don't control your kid. You don't control your spouse. You damn sure don't control the person across the street. You damn sure don't control your government. And you damn sure don't control the mindless masses in the streets burning shit down. So what else do you have then? You're back to what I always teach. All you've got is control over yourself and your own life. So that's what you have to do. You have to become as free in spite of the slavery around you as possible as an individual. And we create our individual freedom by taking certain steps. And some of these are just mandatory or you're not going to get there. And one is you have got to start with mental freedom. You got to realize that, like, I spent half this podcast telling you about all the controlling bullshit, about how miserable it is, about the five stages of grief, about the fact that the people around you don't want to be free. I did that for a reason. So that you'd understand that that's all the shit in your head that locks you down and holds you. That's your ball and chain, right? The sound of the men working on the chain. Gang. Well, remember the movie Cadence with Michael J. Fox in it, right? Like, that's your chain gang chain. That's the number one way you control somebody. You ever see like a picture of a well-trained horse? And the word operative word there is not educated. It's trained. Well-trained horse. Yeah? And that horse has bridle and bit and all. And they take a rope and you pull up next to a fence and you tie that rope to that fence. Well, that horse knows it's going to be very uncomfortable for me to try to pull loose of this. But then the person's like, I don't got nothing really to tie to. And there's like a chair, like a lawn chair. They tie a horse to a lawn chair and the horse just stands there. Because it's been so trained that if I'm attached to anything, resistance hurts. So I'm not going to do it. You put cattle behind electric fence, and they're well trained to it. They've had it happen a few times. Turn the fence off. It doesn't matter. It takes a long damn time before one accidentally bumps in it and goes, wait a minute. Huh. Pigs will get there a lot faster than cattle. You take cattle, and you have gates you want to drive through. You don't want to have to open and close the gate. You put in something called a cattle guard. It's just a series of pipes with holes in between the pipes, like a big grill. The cow tries to walk, and its hoof gets caught, and it hurts, and it backs off. Like, oh, shit. And, it, you know, tests it a couple times. It goes, no. You have cattle that are used to cattle guards. If you had a pavement, you can paint black and white stripes, and that cow won't test it because it's conditioned. You see, this is where mental enslavement is more powerful than physical. What prevents that horse from dragging that chair away? What prevents that cow from walking across that street? What makes you think you have to go to college and borrow money? Huh? What makes you think you have to be a responsible adult with a good job with benefits? Aren't there a lot of people that live really good lives that don't take that approach to getting there? I'm not saying those things are bad. I'm just saying, like, what makes you think you have to do it the way that you're told? There's no law. There's no rule. I was listening to somebody, I think it was online. It might have been on TV. I don't even remember what it was. It was a cooking show. And the guy was a chef, but he was Asian. He was an Asian guy. It might have been an Asian gal. I think she was a Burmese lady. She's from Burma. And they were doing a competition show where they talk about their background and shit. And she was like, so growing up in an Asian family, you have to go get a degree. You do? There's a law? Oh, you're Asian? Get the hell to college? But that person, like, it might as well been a law for that person as a teenager. Mom and dad said I have to. I grew up under this system of control, this mindset. We're better than other people. We have to try harder. I got to go. And it turned out that person had no interest in whatever it was they went to school for. I think it was like engineering or something. And they ended up realizing their passion was in cooking, and they're a very successful cook now. I think this person in particular had moved from cooking in restaurants to like being a private chef for like celebrities. Right? So they didn't have to do that, but we've been conditioned to believe that we have got to follow all kinds of rules that aren't even rules, let alone laws. So until you can first mentally free yourself, until you get to the point where you at least every time you hear something, you immediately get mad, you at least say, wait a minute. Is there anything I can do about this? Is this even true? Maybe I should fact check it. And why is this being put in front of me? Until you get to where at least when you hear so-and-so did this horrible thing over here in this other place, you at least have those 4 points of contention with it. You have no mental sovereignty. Because all I got to do is put the thing I know triggers you in front of you. Try this shit. Get on X, the free speech bastion, right? Thanks, Linda Iaccarino. Limiting reach does not equal free speech. You get on there and go into the crappy-ass For You feed with all kinds of bullshit you're not interested. Make one comment on something that you think is stupid and watch how many other stupid things just like it start popping up in your feed. Oh, he comments on bullshit about climate change. Let's put a bunch of climate change bullshit in there. Oh, when it's a Democrat saying something stupid, he gets really mad. Let's put a bunch of that. Or it's a Republican, he gets really mad. Let's put a bunch of – you'll see instantly. So if we can make a computer algorithm that does this, don't you think they can do it on like mass psychosis? Don't you think that's how the news programming gets done? What will trigger the most people in our audience? Right? My wife will all the time say, did you see this? I'm like, did you check that? Because before I'm going to even look at it, did you check it? Because that doesn't sound like something that really happened. Or like, bombshell report, right? My wife follows all the Trump shit. Bombshell report. You know, DA in real trouble now. Like, you know how many times I've seen that headline or some version thereof? When you read it, like, this is all nothing. Both sides do it. It's mental control, mental sovereignty first. Reclaim it. Decide for yourself what you even want to know. And stop looking at shit you don't care about. You have to ask yourself every day when you take life force, right? Your dash. You have a dash that will go between the day you were born and the day you died on a stone someday or something similar, obituary in a newspaper or an online newsletter or whatever it is. That dash is really long when you're born unless something catastrophic happens in your life. But every day that dash gets a little shorter. And literally every second you spend doing anything is part of the time you have. It's part of the time you have. And so if you spend any of it doing something you don't want to do, you better have a good reason for it. I do a lot of things at times I don't want to do, but I can always explain why without being like doing mental gymnastics to explain why. If you can't do that, you're wasting time. If you're reading about something that you don't really want to know about, you're wasting your life force. So you have to figure out instead of worrying about what you don't want, what do I want? Fill your life with that. How do we keep weeds out of a garden? Do we go out there and pull all the weeds out? No, that's mainstream thinking. It's reductionist thought. What we do to keep weeds down in a garden is we plant as much as we can and then we mulch. It's an additive approach. What can we put in place so the thing we don't want doesn't show up, right? Gilding is an additive reproach to end up with a reductionist result. So I add things, and by adding things, I reduce the propensity of other things I don't want to be there. This weed will not grow where the ground is completely covered in sweet alyssum that the bees like, and I'll make a nice carpet around my peppers so I don't have to weed my peppers anymore. That's your mind. That's how it's that freaking simple. Of course they're not going to teach this. If you teach this, you destroy your ability to control people. See how simple that process is? Define everything you really want to know, be able to do, etc., and fill your life and your brain with what you want. Now, you're still going to have some stuff you don't want. You're still going to have a weed. One weed is going to pop up in the alyssum, and it's really easy then to go, ooh, look, it's a dock with a long taproot. Pull slow. There it is. Plop. Chop and pull and drop instead of chop and drop, right? Really easy to do because we've reduced the preponderance. Or to go, you know, I just have to accept this one, right? I have to go to this thing because it's a family event, and I love these people even though they piss me off, so I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there with a smile on my face, you know, even if I have an earpiece in listening to a football game, I'm going to be there. I'm going to do this, but I know why I'm going to do this. Right? That's how you have to get. And the biggest thing you have to do is filter out all that bullshit that the media is pumping at you. And that's alternative and mainstream, by the way. Next, you have to be very careful that you do not deceive yourself into thinking you control that which you do not. And there's two ways that works. There's one where you really believe you're making a difference and you're not. So all your energy is being wasted. But there's another weird thing, and it has to do with the mental sovereignty and the letting go first, okay? And that is, I had a hard time understanding this about people because some of what I'm telling you today that you don't want to hear, I didn't want to hear when I either realized that it was told that. You know, like, people don't want to be free. I really believed that the average person wanted freedom. I had the worst case. And this is before I even had a podcast, thank God. I had the worst case of Messiah complex anybody's probably ever had when I found out about libertarianism. I mean, when I found out about libertarianism, it was mid-90s. And I'm like, how many of you guys got the same story, basically? That's what I am. Holy shit! There's a word for people like me. I'm a libertarian! You know, based on the couple of comments I heard about libertarianism and voting and the ballot, I thought libertarians were like crazy communists or something when I was in high school. I didn't know. And when I found out about libertarianism and people like Ron Paul, I was like, oh my God, well, there's an answer. There's an answer. We can be fiscally conservative and socially liberal at the same time. Now that I know I didn't know, I know what the problem is. Other people don't know. So I started telling everybody about how great it was to be a libertarian, and they didn't really care. I thought I was nuts. And it didn't matter what the approach was. If the person was left-leaning, they loved everything about the social policy. And they despised everything about the fiscal policy and vice versa. They don't want freedom. And so this was hard for me to understand until I got past that. The fact that people actually seem to believe that if they don't watch the news, something bad will happen because they didn't pay attention. Like, literally, their act of paying attention is somehow, like, all the people paying attention are collectively holding back the bad thing. Because I would put things out, like, take a news fast for, like, 60 days. Don't watch the news for 60 days. And the horror that you would hear in the responses to people was like, what the are you talking about? Where are you coming? I I'm not even picking on you. I don't understand. And it took so long to get it because it didn't make any sense to me. Wait. This person actually thinks that, like, more bad things will happen because they don't look at it. That is indicative of how much control they have on your mind. Tremendous amount of control on your mind. Then you also have to define your version of success. And I want to do two things with this that are really important. One, I do not want you to put success at a point that's ridiculous. I don't want you thinking, like, unless I become the next Elon Musk, I am not successful. Most people are not going to become multi-billionaires. You don't need to be a multi-billionaire to be successful. You don't need to have certain letters after your name to be successful unless that's truly the track that you want, the path that you want. If you want to be a doctor, you're going to need MD, right? Or PhD or whatever, depending on what kind of doctor you want to be. A Dr. Jill, you can be a fake doctor too. But if you want to be a real doctor that like actually practices medicine, then you're going to need MD or at least DO or something like that, right? And if you don't do that, you're not going to get there. But otherwise, that doesn't really define success. The success is defined with what you're like, your life is like. But here's the other thing. And unfortunately, I would rather have somebody set the bar so high that they'll never get there. Because what they'll succeed at is going to blow you away. I just want them to learn to be happy with that eventually, right? But the other side is people set the bar way too low. Way too low. If you have a business and I say something like it with two years of dedicated effort, you can 10x your business, and you haven't already been through a growth phase like that, but yet you're like, oh no, your mind's not right. Of course you can. Whatever you did, just do it again. Now it's double. Now do that again, right? Now you've 4x'd. Do that again, 8x, half of that. What? How is it hard? I mean, doing the shit's hard, but it's all doable. You get up to here, you can go beyond. So don't limit yourself. Don't say like, well, if I just had a single wide trailer and lived like, you know, a broke ass redneck in the middle of the woods, I'd be happy. Well, maybe you would, but I would hope that you would define your life beyond that. Do not set your ground, your limit too close to the ground. Don't do it. Stretch. Whatever you define as success, there should be at least some discomfort when you really think about it. Can I really get there? Immediately answer yourself yes, and then say, how can I? That's the key. But if you are completely comfortable with your goals, raise them. Raise them. Because we are settlers in the end. So I sell a house. People are settlers. No matter what they say, they're going to buy the best thing they can within their price range. So my entire philosophy on selling a house is based on the fact that people settle. I will not do this, I will not do that. But if they really need a house, in the end, they're going to buy the best thing they can get, closest to what they want, for the money that they have in the area they want to live in. Every time. Person has a budget of $5 million is going to settle. Person with a budget of $500,000 is going to settle. So I know when you set goals, at some point, no matter where they are, you will say, this is enough. And that's okay. Push that level way up, though, so that by the time you get to that point, it really is. And what you've actually figured out, it's not that you couldn't go further. You've gone so far, you figured out what you didn't want that you thought you did. And so instead of settling for not having something you want, you're settling for building the life you really do. If you can't get to that point in your mind, it's going to be very hard to adapt to the shit that we're about to deal with. I mean, this is a better way to live in the best of times and the worst of times, but you really need it in the worst of times. And we're about to have some of the worst of times. I mean, it's already here. The day you look at your grandchild and think, I don't know if this kid will ever be able to buy a house, how much worse does it get? Now, I know you're thinking of the kid with the flies on his face in Ethiopia on your TV. Okay, yes, it can get worse. But given how we grew up with what we were promised, with the American dream that we were sold, to look at a 15-year-old kid and wonder, will this person ever be able to even buy a house? When your kid did it 10 years ago, and then you have serious doubts about your grandchildren being able to do it? You don't think we've collapsed? Remember, collapse is like when a building collapses, it still may be 50 foot high, right? But if it was a 200-foot building, that's a problem. That's where we're getting to right now. So you got to define for your version of success and go after it. Next, you have got to become economically literate. There's the finance. I can't think of it now. I stopped getting that email now that I think about it. There's like a financial term of the day email. I'll try to look it up and add it to the show notes on the audio side when I get done, if I can remember. But you should be on that email. It just sends you a word, and then it defines what it is. And I just realized when I said it, I haven't seen that email in a long time. Just knowing, you know, what a margin call actually is, instead of some term that you heard that a Gen Z wrote into a script that didn't know what they were talking about when they put it in a TV show that was on at 8 o'clock at night. Like, just knowing what that actually means. To know what a margin call is, you have to understand margin in the first place, the purpose of margin, and the terms of margin loans, and what they're used for and how they work. Then you can understand what a margin call is. Well, then you might understand how the stock market around you is doing the crazy shit that it's doing. And you don't have to become an active day trader or anything, but you've got to become financially literate. If I say something like COGS in my business, I have a COGS, and you don't know what that means, you really should. You really should. What is COGS? Cost of goods sold. It's a standard industry term. It's a standard accounting term. You should have a basic understanding of accounting. Because how else are you going to partner with your CPA to make sure that you get every deduction you have coming? Right? I saw Mark Cuban was bragging about how much he paid in taxes. And he was comparing it to Donald Trump paying so little. That's because Trump's in the real estate business. You want to pay as little taxes as possible? Go in the real estate business. The whole business and the whole system was set up by the government that Cuban claims to support so that the real estate business, you could pay almost no taxes in. It makes me think of a meme when that came out long, like this is something new or something. Oh, my God. Right? No. Came out a long time ago. It was a meme. It was using Obi-Wan and Anakin, like the young version of Anakin and Obi-Wan from like the three that were the first three that were the second three, whatever. Right? Like from like Phantom Menace on up or whatever the hell it was. But there's a point where they're talking, right? And this is where Anakin is like a young adult. And Obi-Wan says, Donald Trump made billions and didn't pay any taxes. And Anakin says, is it possible to learn this power? That's exactly how I feel about it. I want to learn the power to give away as little of my individual sovereignty in the form of my labor and my productivity as possible. And guess what? The system's designed for that to happen if you're financially literate. But you've got to become financially literate. When you listen to somebody talk on one of like the business news networks, if you're like, oh, that guy sounds really smart, but you don't know what he's saying, you're not financially literate, you'll usually find out that person's a moron in a suit that knows if you put enough big words together, you sound like you know what you're talking about. Because boy, do we all suffer from Gelman amnesia. But that was an episode last week. We won't go into it today. You have to put yourself and your family first. And this is going to be a hard thing for some people to accept. Notice I said put yourself and your family first. Who did I put first? You. You have to put yourself first. But my family, you just said you'd die for your... Yes, I would. Yes, I would. But here's what I know. If I die, that's a last-ditch effort to save a life, right? Like, because if I'm dead, my wife doesn't have me here to help take care of her. My grandchildren don't have me in their life. My son and my daughter-in-law do not have me in their life. That list of people is the most important people in my world right there. Even people that are really, really, really important to me, they are a distant second group. Well, there's room for five more groups in there that I ain't met yet between that group and like my best friends and extended family and shit. Like those people are everything to me. But in some level, it's put me first. Like, if I can't do what I do every day and earn the money the way that I earn them and have the freedom that I have, I can't be that person that they want in their life. I can't live for another person no matter how much I love them. It's an Ayn Rand quote, right? She'll never live or never ask another man to live for me, right? I can't do that, and neither can you. We actually have to be selfish. We have to be selfish. You've been taught that being selfish is bad. Nobody has ever made a dramatic difference in the world that wasn't a divinely selfish person. Give me any person, no matter how much you think they gave of themselves from others, they were doing what they most wanted to do. So there are a lot of things that I might choose to do for my family, but I'm doing it because I want to take care of them. That's still putting myself first. You have to be careful you don't conflate that so much that you become second. But you have to take care of yourself. And you have to find passion and joy in your own life. And they, the people you care about, that you're worried about in this, they need to do it too. Think about a marriage, just a two-person marriage, no kids. And both are living for the other. Sounds like a Hallmark card. It's just about as effective in reality as using it as a marriage counseling pamphlet, right? Sounds good, but it doesn't really work. It's codependency. Neither side can speak up for themselves and what they want. It makes me think of the old story of the old man and old lady. And they're sitting down to eat bread, and they're down to the last couple pieces of bread. And the old man, as he always does, butters the bread and gives his wife the heel, the end cap, and takes the last piece that's not a heel. And the old lady says to him finally, after all these years, they're like, you know, been married for 65 years. Harold, you do that all the damn time. You always leave me with the end. And he goes, I thought you liked the end. I thought it was your favorite piece of the bread. In fact, it's my favorite piece of the bread. I would have been eating it all these years because I like the crust. And neither one of them knew what the other one wanted. That's how so many people live their lives. With their friends, their family, their siblings, etc. No one knows why the thing is the way that it is. They just assume the other one wants it that way. There's another story like that of the wife's cooking a pot roast, and she cuts the small end off it and folds it over and puts it in the pan. And the husband looks at it and goes, honey, I like the way you cook. I'm not picking on her or nothing, but why do you always cut the end off the roast? She says, I don't know. Mom always did. So they call mom. Mom's like, I don't know. Your grandma always did. So they call grandma, and grandma said, my pan wasn't big enough for the whole roast to fit in it. I had to cut it in half to fit it in there. There's so much of that in our lives because we put ourselves so far down the line. And this is the worst part. What we do is we put ourselves first for all the bullshit, for all the feel-good shit that we shouldn't be doing anyway, but ourselves last for all the meaningful things. You have to completely flip that around. When I say put yourself first, I mean for your own good, put yourself first so that you'll be here to take care of the people around you, because you will naturally not walk all over your family. People are so afraid to be who they innately really are, because the person you are, if the first thing I say, first thing you feel when I say put yourself first is, but my family, you're not going to turn your back on them by putting yourself first, because you don't want to. If you have that concern, you don't need to worry about it. It's people that don't have any concern like that at all. We get into narcissists and sociopaths and psychopaths. I'm not talking to those people today. I don't have the power to fix that. If you have that problem, you need counseling or some shit. I don't even know there's anything that can be done for some people. So I'm assuming you're not that person. You have to also drop any adherence to blind patriotism. Blind patriotism makes you support things that don't make any sense. I've done entire episodes on how dangerous blind patriotism is. Some Congress clown was out tweeting this weekend, cheering on World War III. An attack on Israel is an attack on America. Motherfucker, let me send you a globe so you can see where these two places are. Okay? Let's look at where this country is and where this country is. And by the way, your people can't afford fucking food, and you're worried about starting a war and saying that another country is equivalent to our soil. Pencil neck little shit. You notice all these people that use that kind of shit to drum up, they never sacrifice anything. They're the ones that hid under a desk because a guy with assless chaps sat down at Nancy Pelosi's desk, cowered like little bitches, but they want to start a war and send your kid off to it. People like Nikki Haley, one thing Ramaswamy got right, she will sell out the life of your child for Lockheed and what have you, so that she can buy a bigger house. That's how all these people are. They're freaking scum. And they use your patriotism to control you. Patriotism should be to ideals, right? The ideals of America. I'm a very patriotic person for the ideals that are America. But the system that is the American government is not, has nothing, is no connection at this point to the ideals of what America is, right? There's no connection. No connection. I'm laughing at something Lovecat just dropped into the live chat. There is no connection between the ideals of America and what we think of as America when we're talking about the state and the government. But they have a flag. Okay, so you're controlled by symbolism. That's blind patriotism. When somebody says, this is going on in the world, what should the United States do? What I say to myself is, okay, let me step back like a Vulcan. Think about what the United States is and is supposed to represent, and what's going on over here, and does it even make sense for us to touch it? And if it does, if we touch it, what's going to happen? And even if we mean well, and even if it seems like we should touch it, if touching it will make it worse, like a doctor, first do no harm, we shouldn't touch it. That's patriotism. Well, I messed with America, now they're going with their ass bomb. That's blind patriotism. That's blind patriotism. And we live so long with two giant oceans insulating us from the consequences of our aggression that we're just dumb enough to fall for it. Don't think if you escalate this shit that no one's going to bleed on these shores. You're like, well, you should be brave. I'm brave for myself. I'm not brave with your life. I have no right to risk your life. And again, will the world be a better place because we did this? Will the situation be better because we did this? When you say that today, you're attacked as being unpatriotic, a tool of Putin, whatever the fuck bullshit they come up with. Blind patriotism. You've got to shed it. I didn't say you couldn't be patriotic, but you better not be blindly patriotic, because you will never have sovereign and freedom if you're blindly anything. You won't. If you are blindly in support of your side, whatever that is, if you are blindly patriotic, if you are blindly attached to the words and deeds of other people who are like leaders in your life, you will just never succeed for yourself. And you will not be able to adapt to the change and flux that's coming. And boy, I'm really talking to you guys that are like 30 and younger. You know, people my age, our course is kind of set. You know, we have enough that we'll be able to get through whatever comes till we go in a box. You guys that are 25, 30 years old, you have that stride in your life to hit yet, and you're going to hit it right in the middle of this mess. And if you do it without clarity in your mind, in your heart, your soul, in your spirit, and without a blinding drive to achieve what you want in a way that will benefit the people you love, you're going to get steamrolled by it. You're going to get crushed because no one's coming to do it for you. No one's coming to fix it. There is no orange man pumpkin going to rise up and fix it. There is no fill in the blank with whatever you think the next version is. The stick, the walking stick that is Nikki Haley or a Vivek Ramaswamy. And I was going to have him on the show. He just backed out. Love to hear what he has to say. I just don't think he's going to, like, no one's going to fix this. If you think they are, you're still in denial. You got to get through those five stages of grief with this. And know the difference between responsibilities and excuses. This is the best piece of advice I'm going to give you today. There's a book called Illusions by an author named Richard Bach. It was very, very popular, number one bestseller in the early 70s. He wrote a book prior to it, I think in 68 or 69, called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And the two books are loosely tied to each other. Because in the first book is a pure fictional work, and the second book is a 99% fictional work. But Richard is himself in the second book, Illusions, and there's references back to Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And in the book, Illusions, he meets a guy named Donald Shimoda, who is a modern-day messiah. Sound exactly what it sounds like. He's basically another version of Jesus come back to Earth, but what if Jesus showed up in the 70s? Flight airplanes. Yeah, like little barn airplanes, little tandem wing airplanes, old school airplanes, took people for rides for $3 a ride. That's what the whole story is about. And in this book, they meet each other, and that's in this book what Richard's doing. He's basically flying little small town to little small town, find a dirt place you can land these planes, put up a sign, and take people for rides just for something to do. And as he meets Donald, they kind of start hanging out together, and finally Richard says, Donald, how do you know all these things? And he said, oh, they give you a book. And he says, well, like a Messiah's hand. He goes, yeah. And he throws him this little book. He's like, how's it work? He goes, you just open it anywhere you want to and hold in your mind the problem you're trying to solve. And wherever you open it to, the solution to your problem will be right in front of you. And Richard's like, oh, it's a magic book. And Donald's like, you can do it with anything. You do it with Snoopy comics if your mind's in the right place. Give you a feel for the book. But one of the most important things in that book, the Little Messiah's Handbook, the book within the book, there's a statement. The best way to avoid responsibility is to say, I've got responsibility. In other words, we spend most of our lives using other things and other people and their needs as an excuse for why we haven't achieved the things that we really want to do. Sometimes it's a benevolence and sometimes it's a malevolence that we use as our excuse. Well, I would do this, except I have to take care of my kids. Well, why would you do this? Because I would be more successful. Well, don't you think that would be good for your kids? Or I would do this business, but the government says I can't. So instead of a benevolent reason, my responsibilities are not to go to jail. Instead of saying, how can I do this and not go to jail and be successful with it? We love to make excuses under the banner of having responsibility. Your first responsibility is to yourself. And again, I know this is hard for people, but if you're not a happy person, you will make the people that you claim to care about miserable. Has anybody ever been around a person who was miserable and thought, gee, I want to spend more time with this person? Don't you like when you ask somebody how they're doing and they say not so good, go, damn. All right, tell me. But you know, isn't your like, don't you generally expect that when you say, how you doing, somebody's gonna say, oh good, and you, oh, I'm great. And then that was just small talk to get past. Well, somebody tells you, and then they start telling you about their problem. Like, if they're a person you really care about, you'll listen and wonder if there's anything I can do. Maybe just listen, be an ear. But when a person is clearly just miserable, like your whole life is structured such that when you're not going to ask tomorrow because you know the answer is going to be worse. Do you want to be around that person? When you deal with like a Debbie Downer, right? Or I call them Eeyores from the old Winnie the Pooh story. It'll never work. Don't you like just want to get away? And I do. That's actually one of my laws of life. Like when I realize you are an inherently negative human being, unless we live, you know, like unless it's like somebody in my family or something that I have to help, I'm out until you're ready to like try to do something positive with your life. You're an energy drain. We've all had energy vampires, right? You just like you talk to a person for 30 minutes and you go take a shower because you feel dirty. And not that way, right? Dirty, like just like a funk on you. I had a friend like this named Brad, one of my best friends from the military, but he's gotten this point in life where it was just like everything was an excuse and everything was misery. And he actually had refused to rebuild his life after being knocked down pretty hard, I'll be honest. But there was a clear path. And he just, and later he did, but while he was going through that phase, like I took him away for a couple days to my bug out location at the time and just kind of hung out and shot guns and drank some beer and bullshitted about the old days and all. But in the end, it was like, I got to like put up a wall here. So I tell you all that so that when I tell you, you have to put yourself first. You have to not equate excuses as responsibilities. And it is important that you become a happy person for the people that you love so that you'll understand what I'm talking about. Because if what you're doing is really making me miserable, trust me, the people around you feel that energy and they're not happy either. It's okay to put yourself first. In fact, you need to. Final thoughts on this today. First of all, we have an unfair system. In fact, we don't have an unfair system. We have many, 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 many unfair systems. And everything that they do, and again, there is a they. When people are like, who are they? I don't have time for that for you today if you don't know who they are. Right? But every time they try to fix something, don't they make it worse? So there's an unfair system because some people may not be hired because of their gender or their race. So we're going to mandate that a certain number of people that are gendered and raced accordingly must be hired or let into school, and we create an equally unfair system in the other direction. We try to fix what is unfair by being more unfair and tossing merit aside. Like every solution that they try does this. It is an unfair system. It is an unfair world. We will never have equality of outcomes, but we will also probably never have equality of opportunity. Because most libertarians, most small government Republicans that really are, not rhinos in the government, in fact, many Democrats, most people, when you put it that way, like, do you believe there should be equality of outcome? If they are not mentally damaged and they have an IQ over 85, they say that's not doable. You know, they know it's a world like Harrison Bergeron with the bands around your head to dumb you down to equal levels to get that to happen. Everybody has to be handicapped to equality to get that. There are people who will never achieve greatness. So if anybody achieves greatness, you don't have equality of outcome. Most people actually do understand that. Now, there's less and less of them. They've done a really good job of programming the brains of our youth to think equality of outcome should be a natural event. It isn't. Most people do not know. It's not true. So you say, how about equality of opportunity? Well, absolutely. And what kind of Satanist, Stalinist, you know, Marxist are you? Fascist, Hitler, whatever, if you don't agree with that. Well, it's never happened. It's never happened in any society ever that everybody had equal opportunity. We've certainly had societies that got closer to it than others. And we should always strive for it. But it's not there, it's not here, and you're not going to see it. So let me explain what that means. Yes, it's not fair. It doesn't matter. It's not an excuse for your inaction. In fact, it is an impetus for action. Every minute you spend worrying about the fact that some piece of some deck somewhere is stacked against you is a minute that you did not spend knocking the deck down, ripping the door off the hinges, and going through the freaking hole in the wall. Like, you have got to aggressively go after what you want in this world, and the more unfair it becomes, the more that is the truth. The more that's the truth. The next is, you can't change society, but you can change you. You can't change your neighbor, but you can change yourself. And the primary ways that we need to change ourselves are just two things. As simple as that sounds, just two things. How we think and how we spend our time doing stuff. That's it. That's all you have to take control of. How you think. So when I say how you think, I'm talking about what you think about, where you spend your time thinking, how you gather your information, what you concern yourself with, what you tune out, all of it. I'm not saying a damn word about the conclusions you come to. I'm just saying filter the inputs and where you spend the time. And then you have to change your actions. Most people that claim they want something, if you sat down and said, okay, for the next week, take his notebook with you and write down everything you do to further your goal of having that thing you just told me you wanted. When they showed back up at the end of the week, it would look just like this. For those who can't see the camera because you're on the audio, it's a blank sheet of fucking paper with not a goddamn thing on it that says a damn literal thing that they did to further that goal. Now, if they said something pragmatic, like, I want to make sure that my presentation for the board is done by Friday when it's due, well, that'll probably get done because some other artificial structure around you. I'm talking about the person who says, I want a farm. I want a homestead. I want my own business. I want to grow my business. That's a side hustle to the size of a business where I can go out and quit my job and do it full time. Okay, what have you done to further that goal this week? And let's say it's a business. Well, I filled all the orders that came in. Okay. And how many more orders did you get this week than last week? How many more orders this quarter than the previous quarter? First, they probably don't know. Second, the answer is probably less or the same amount. So what have you done to achieve that larger macro goal? I want to retire really comfortably by the time I'm 55. What'd you do this week? You're 45, you've got 10 more years. Goes fast. 10 years goes like 10 years. 10 years between 10 and 20. It's like three lifetimes is how it feels. 10 years between 20 and 30 feels like 5 years. It doesn't feel like 5 years while it's happening. But when you wake up and go, shit, that was on your 30th birthday, and you think back to your 20th birthday, you're like, shit, that happened awful quick. Bro, let me tell you what happens 40 to 50. Days are short. Days are long. Years are short. 50 to 60, 60 to 70. That's your 80. Right? And I don't want to pop anybody's balloon, but most people aren't doing anything new when they're 80. So if you want to retire by 55 and you're 45, you better get on that. You better have something on your freaking piece of paper at the end of the week. What did you do? What did you do? Then you don't really want this thing. It's an idea. It's mental masturbation. Once you crystallize you want something, you need to develop a plan to get there, plot a course, and be constantly check that course. You know, I'm not going to let anybody make some jokes about a boat hitting a bridge or anything, but every freaking day somewhere in the world, a ship leaves port. Let's say it's leaving Shanghai, China, and it's headed to San Francisco. All right, probably turn around and go back really fast. But this is what it said. And that ship will probably end up in a harbor in San Francisco within 30 minutes of its original plan. Why? Because a captain plots a course with his first officer. They know the currents, the wind, the planned weather, diversion, etc., how much ballast they need, how much cargo they're carrying, what the top speed of their ship is, what their cruising speed is. They know all that shit. They plot a course, and some bitch, they get there. Imagine how many wouldn't get there, or not get there on time anyway, if they just went out, pointed the ship, San Francisco's that way on that bearing, got it up to speed, shut off the motors and let it drift and said, that'll do. That's how most people live their freaking lives. It's no wonder they don't get where they're going. It's no wonder. You need to always remember you are a human being. Your life matters. Don't waste it. You are a human being. Your life matters. Don't waste it. My wife and I both have more and more conversations about what it means to get older. It is something you have to mentally deal with as a human being as you cross certain milestones. You know, my wife and I have a age spread, and she's older than me, but it just so works out that, like, based on raw mathematics and numbers, we should hit the dirt nap, you know, unless something out of the side happens. But in general, based on longevity, we should probably end up checking out about the same time. So even though she's older in that walk, we kind of have the same finish line. You know what I mean? And as you have these discussions, something I remind her of and try to remind myself of often as I look at my future and think of my face changing over the next 15 years in the mirror and what little isn't gray being gray and the wrinkles coming and all of it is, never, ever complain about growing old. It is a privilege denied to many. There are many people who would have loved to take your place and have grown old. And that's because life itself is a gift. It's a blessing. When you're born into this world, you have unlimited potential, unlimited opportunity to achieve things and to find happiness in your life. And I don't think it even matters to some degree where you're born or what time you're born in. There is a way for most people to break out. Now, there's places where things are so terrible and so awful. I won't say that. But if you're listening to this, it's not you. You have potential to build something beautiful in this world for at least the time that you're here to be as part of it. And maybe if you do it right, to leave something behind for others. And every moment that you spend not doing it is a waste. And it is spitting in the face of someone who died young, who didn't want to, that would have. The child you saw on TV that died of leukemia this weekend or whatever it was. You know, maybe that kid was going to do the things that you say that you want to do, but they were actually going to do it. They didn't get the chance. You did, and you're pissing it away. Comes to taking care of your health. It's the same thing. You know how many people wish they were where you are right now? You have not destroyed your kidneys yet. You have not gone full-blown type 2 diabetes to where it becomes. You have not lost your foot. They did, and they're wishing they could rewind and go back to the point you're at where you could make that change, and they can't. You know how I guarantee you that type 1 diabetics want to just beat the crap out of most type 2 diabetics. I was born with this as a genetic deficiency. There's nothing I can do. I have to live with this. I know it's going to shorten my life. There's things in my life I will never be able to do because if I do, it will put me in the ground sooner. I have to give certain things up. I have to basically I have to perform the function of a pancreas for myself for my entire life, and you won't stop eating fucking Twinkies. If I'm hurting your feelings today, good. You need it. Because that's the truth. There's a reason there's 3 dialysis clinics between my house and downtown Fort Worth. And it ain't because all of a sudden kidneys changed. It's America's diet. You're a human being. Your life has value. And if you are not doing something good with it, you are pissing away that value in the face of people who would pray to God to have the opportunity that you have. Don't do it. And you can only do it right when you assert your individual sovereignty, your mental and physical sovereignty, your choice to know that everything you do, even when it's something you really don't want to do, it was still a free choice that you chose in the end. I don't want to do this, but I'm trying to get in shape, so I'm going to work out. I don't want to do this, but I love my family, so I'm going to do it for them. I don't want to do this, but I want to build my business, and that means I'm not fucking off fishing today. I'm working. That's the only way to get where you want to be, no matter where it is. No matter where it is. In the end, be the wolf. You know, a lot of times when people talk about preppers, about lone wolf, you know, be the lone wolf. There's not really any lone wolves. That's not how wolves work. Even the wolf that looks like a lone wolf, he's like a scout. What the wolf is exceptional at is being fierce when he or she needs to on their own, when they are being the scout or when they are broke off from the pack, but still being part of that pack and knowing that that pack will lay down its life for them and they the other way. That's the real wolf. That's the American gray wolf. That's how they live. They literally live by the principles of libertarianism. There's like these studies they've done where they put trackers on these wolf packs and they all kind of have their own territory and they just kind of stay out of each other's shit. They have little tiny bits of overlap. They feed the pups. They defend the pups. No one's going to mess with the pups. And if you think that, you know, just because the male's bigger, he's the only dangerous one, go fuck with the pups of a she-wolf and see what happens to your ass. The whole pack will end up eating you, but she'll kill you before they get there. This is the attitude we have to have about our families, about the people we love. I will stand fiercely, independently alone, but I am still part of a pack. And if you fuck with my pack, you're done. This is exactly what the people that run this place do not want you to think like. Can you imagine trying to govern a nation of 350 million people where half of them think this way? Do you think just because we're split almost evenly into Democrats and Republicans that half of them do? Because they don't. Hopefully by now today you realize they don't. People don't think this way. But imagine trying to govern people who do. Why do you think I chose the fire ant as one of our symbols for TSPC? You think it's just because of the story of the ant and the grasshopper? No, it's because the fire ant has the ultimate in FAFO. Fuck around and find out, right? Fire ants don't give a shit about you at all. They really don't. They go out and they build a nest, and they are largely peaceful. I know this sounds crazy, but they're largely peaceful. Like, I've never seen fire ants be like, all right, guys, this is what we're going to do. We're all going to march out today and find this asshole and sting the shit out of him. That's never what happens. I've been stung plenty by fire ants. It's always the same shit. I screwed up. It's a big lumbering giant. I stepped on their house, and they're like, it's on. It's on. They'll jack you up. And unlike bees, they can keep biting. They bite, they sting, and they piss formic acid into your wound. They make porcupines look like pussies, right? Fire ants are a bitch when you mess with them. That should be America. You want to be patriotic to something, be patriotic to that. You will not harm my children. You will not poison the mind of my child. I will decide how my child is raised. You shall not touch them. You have a society that's conditioned you to believe that literally you're basically giving your child to the state to be raised. No, I don't think so. Government me harder. That's what Mr. Fixie says. It's about how it is. People want to be ruled harder. They want to be told what to do. There's comfort in somebody else taking the lead. There's comfort in somebody else making the decision. Especially if you believe they're competent. Look around you. Are they competent? Do you think these people running your country today are competent? Look at the people that are in the highest offices and highest bureaucracy positions in the land. They're not competent. You have a guy running the ATF that can't take an AR-15 apart. Seriously. Like, I'm not making that up. You have a guy that's like the number two person in charge of what to do with our nuclear waste that has no experience and no education in nuclear energy at all. But, you know, he has sex with dudes dressed like dogs. Well, that's good enough. And he steals stuff from airports. I'm not even picking on a demographic here. That's just not competence. The person following the incompetent may as well make their own decisions. You can't be any dumber than these people are. Assert your freedom. Assert your independence. Real quick here as I wrap up, I want to remind you guys, if you like the show and the work that we do, one of the ways you can do support us is do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day doesn't really have anything to do with what we're talking, except, you know, being a good cook is a good thing to do. It's a good way to have a lot of independence, freedom, and joy in your life. And I am a huge fan of sous vide cooking. You guys got me to do it. I didn't want anything to do with sous vide cooking good 8 years ago. You guys started emailing me about it. It's so cool. And I'm like, this sounds like some pain in the ass bullshit. Until I tried it. And like, this is the easiest way to cook a beautiful steak I've ever tried. And a lot of other cool stuff you can do. In my write-up, I tell you how to do things with it. Like, you know, make yogurt with a sous vide machine. You bet you can. Or egg bites. Creme brulee, or whatever you want to do. There's all kinds of things you can do, but it is exceptional for two things. Cooking meat, and specifically like pork, lamb, beef, and veal. Like all of those are beautiful what you can do with it. The other one is making soft-boiled eggs. You can make perfect soft-boiled eggs with them. And the one I've got here usually sells for about $100, and the markdown on it really doesn't look as good as it is because they've repriced the retail at $80 on it. But this thing normally sells for about $100. I want to show you this. This is one of the things I do for you guys, price watching. So this is that product's price watch I have set up right here. And if you look at that, it spends most of its time right at $100. It's $99.99. And you can see all the drop downs in price dropping down into the range of about $80. And only twice has it gotten much lower than that. Today's the cheapest this thing's ever been, $67.55. So you probably ain't going to get a better price on it than that. So if you want to pick up today's item today, if you want to add sous vide to your life, you want to add a second sous vide circulator to your kitchen, check it out, man. It's a great product. Again, it's made by the same people that make the Instapot cooker, and it's just a simple, easy to use, wonderful piece of equipment. I've been using the one I have now for a long time. My Anova actually died, and I fixed it with a cheap aquarium pump because it was a circulation thing. But when that happened and I needed a new one, I figured I would try something different, and this is what I settled on, and it's really a great tool. The other thing you can do, consider taking some of my courses that we're now building at homefoodsystems.com. You should check out homefoodsystems.com right away, like right now as you're listening to this, because there's two courses there. There's the bioreactor composting course, and we have had great feedback on that. It's only $40. It is an excellent education, if I do say so myself. One of the highest compliments I got was by Billy Bond, and I love Billy Bond. He's like a brother to me. And he is huge into soils and composting. I would consider him a master composter. He is a graduate of Elaine Ingham's soil course, which is a $4,500 course. Unsolicited testimonial. He said this live on a feed with me where he was interviewing me. He said he learned more of substance in the first hour of that course of mine for $40 than in the first 10 hours of a $4,500 course. And we have a free course, Principle-Based Permaculture Design. Literally, all you have to do is register, select it, and you can take it. Both of them come with quizzes and exams that are graded automatically and a certificate of completion at the end. And I am about 80% through now with the deck build for the cover crop course that will come next. And so I'll probably start recording that by next week. With that, I do want to take a couple questions, or actually maybe more. We'll see. If you don't, I only have two questions here and a thank you to give. So if you don't see yourself, your question come up, go ahead and ask it, and I'll come back around one more time. But Trapper ZC gave me a $1.99 super chat. Always good stuff here. Thanks. Well, thank you for the super chat. I really appreciate it. If a couple people did that every episode, I would never have to worry about turning ads on the feed ever again. Dark Horse says, how do you determine pricing in BTC for my IT service? Well, that's really not what we're talking about today, but I'll do it anyway. Glad to see you're at least wanting Bitcoin now. Progress. You price it in dollars. That's how. If you normally charge $50 an hour, then you charge the equivalent amount in Bitcoin at the time of payment. At the time of payment. That's how. That's all you do. Just convert it. This bill would be $500 if it was cash. It's $500 worth of Bitcoin at the moment that you issue the invoice. That's it. I don't know why everybody thinks this is hard to do. I think what's hard for people is that they want to like price it in Satoshis or something, and we're just not there, and we're not going to be anytime soon. By the way, there will be a Bitcoin breakout tomorrow. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff that's going on right now in the Bitcoin space. So that'll be tomorrow. And I'll tell you something really cool tomorrow, too. Like the Primal client for Nostr now has an integrated Bitcoin Lightning wallet integrated into it in the iOS and Android versions. And you can literally buy $5 worth of Bitcoin in the App Store and have it immediately deposited to that wallet. We'll be talking about stuff like that tomorrow. One Step Closer says, are we seeing the end of all current empires? China and Russia have major demographic challenges as well as the Europeans. Yes. We're seeing the end stage of empire in all the places that you could think of as being empires. It doesn't mean there won't be another empire. It doesn't even mean it won't geographically center around one of the failing empires. What Russia, Europe, China, believe it or not, for all the people they have, and the United States all have in common is that we are all below the reproduction rate necessary to not decline in population. If you take away immigration, the United States is already in population decline. And people don't think that about China, but they are, and they're completely unbalanced. All their years of mandatory shit with you can only have one kid, the one-child policy. And there are ways to have two kids. Don't think of it the way that a lot of people have been brainwashed to believe. But it was official policy. And there was a lot of people making conscious decisions. We want a boy. So once you could figure out how to determine if it was a boy or a girl before it was born, China had no problem with abortions. Just saying. You have a population heavily weighted to the male in China. So you need women to have – I know that some people struggle with this little bit of knowledge here, but you need women to have babies. Men can't do that. Putting a man in – a woman in a suit of clothes that looks like a man and giving her hormones so she'll grow hair on her face does not make her a man. Make sure a woman that looks like a man. She can still have a baby. I don't care what you do to a dude. He ain't having no babies. He ain't having no babies. So we have a declining population. And the other thing that all those countries have in common, us and China have something very much in common, a huge welfare state. They're both huge welfare states where the needs of those who do not work due to infirmity, age, or working the system sufficiently are fulfilled by the actions of the people who do. You add that to a declining population of young people and you're not having new births, you got problems. Greece is going to be the first country to completely demographically collapse in modern society. They are at like the teetering point right now. There was an article out about it today. Anyway, guys, hope you enjoyed today's show. In short, I do believe we're at the end of this stage of empire. For all of the empires of the world. But, you know, like I said, I'm not sure Europe has an empire anymore. Britain certainly doesn't. We are their proxy, but if we fall, then they're gone too. China doesn't really have an empire. China has, in many ways, an economic vassal empire, similar to what we built in a different way, heavily vested in Africa and South America. They'll probably be able to maintain that longer than we will. Take that for what you will. The bigger thing to think about here is it doesn't really matter what happens elsewhere. What matters to you is what happens where you are. I hope I made a case for you today that you need to be aggressively even viciously building the future you want, because if you're not, somebody's making sure you're never going to have it. With that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow with that episode of the Bitcoin Breakout. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.